So yeah, dude, I got these allergy eye drops.
Dude, pollen is everywhere right now.
Dude, like some places it snows here, it pollens. But I'm having a hard time of it, dude, because like I never had allergies before. Everybody who had allergies, like I'd get like a little hay fever once a year. Never a full on. But like a year and a half ago, I was working in the yard, and I hit a wasp nest, and they flew out. They were pissed, and I took off running, and one got me, and he nailed me like hard in the back, like worst I've ever been stung. Like it killed, and it rose up, and it itched. And it was just like the worst possible wasp sting you can get. And again, I've never been affected by bugs or pollen ever since then, dude. Like mosquitoes bother the hell out of me.
Okay.
If I get bit by ants, like I used to be like noticed that I had ants on me and had been bitten a couple times. I never really felt it.
Right.
Now it's like burns like fire. Like I get the, I understand. Like it's like my whole life I never had any problems with it. Now I'm just like.
See, the worst for me is, man, I can't stand or I think the actual name for them are bull gnats. There's these biting gnats that we used to have to deal with. I used to bass fish, the tournament fish, and those bull gnats would just tear us up, man. And those things leave a knot. And they used to always bite me on my neck, right on the back of my neck. They leave a huge knot that ends up pussing and stuff over time. I mean, it's horrible, man. It's painful. And they're out again, man. Somebody told me the other day they got bit by one over their eye, and it, like, swole up real bad, so... I got my first mosquito bite of the year last night, as a matter of fact. You know, it's that time. It's been raining, warming up a little bit, and here they come.
Yeah. So right now my eyes feel like they're too big for my head. Like they feel like they don't fit in the sockets because...
Well, I mean, this morning...
All that grunge and the...
I walked out this morning and there's yellow powder everywhere, and I was like, holy shit, when did this happen?
Yeah. strangely enough, there's... You're talking about the yellow powder, so there's a... I'm in a writer's group, and there's this dude, his name is Clayton Smith, and he wrote a book called Apocalypticon, and it's like a post-apocalyptic comedy, you know, it's like a horror comedy novel, and the, you know, it's post-apocalyptic, basically the end of the world happened, and the, what it was the weapons used contained a powder that as soon as it touched you, it melted you.
Oh, wow.
And turned you into this yellow powder. So these characters are walking around through this post-apocalyptic world. They survived. You know, they're survivors. But everything's coated in this yellow powder. Like, everywhere.
Wow.
And so, like, now I see the pollen and I'm like...
You think of that, huh?
Yeah, that's the monkey juice. the monkey powder. So... Anyway, you need to read the book to...
Well, just speaking of post-apocalyptic, have you ever read Why the Last Man?
Mm-mm.
I finally went ahead and got into Why the Last Man, and that is a badass storyline, dude.
Is it?
Very cool.
I need to check it out. I've always heard nothing but good things about it.
Not sure if you're familiar with the storyline, but somehow a plague wipes out the earth and kills all the men, except for a few that have a certain DNA structure and survives. And there's Why the Last Man. And he's trying to figure out what the hell happened and trying to find some other guy somewhere on this planet. And it's just him, and the only other survivor was he's found so far is a male monkey. That's his pet. And it's about
women?
Them. Yeah, and women are trying to kill him. The women are still alive, and they're kind of taking everything over and stuff. But it's an awesome storyline, dude.
To check it out.
It is. It's pretty badass, and the artwork is phenomenal.
I'll just have to get it. I'll have to grab the graphic. So, hey, hello, everyone. Forgive some of the coughs and the grunge. We were talking about allergies, but the show must go on. This is Scary Dad Podcast episode. What episode is this?
Man, you got me. Feels like the first one every time.
I think it would be episode 22.
Okay.
And if I'm wrong about that, it'll be labeled correctly on the website, so you'll know. Whatever you're reading is true, and whatever I say may or may not be true. So, episode 22, we're going to talk about Scream Queens.
Which is pretty appropriate because we're watching Cool Hand Luke in the background, and the car wash chick was just on there. It was so yeah.
She Scream knew Queens exactly what she was doing.
Oh yeah, Paul Newman even said that.
So we're gonna go, you know, go right into the history segment. Actually, first. I'm gonna drop a little bit of an Easter egg on you. I'm trying. We're trying obviously to work the haunted forum and the Twitter and everything. So I'm gonna throw a real easy contest at you. The first person who either on Twitter or on Facebook will, you know, either follow me and DM me or join the forum and then and post it in a comment. The first person who says the word Scream Queen in a comment on Scary Dad's Haunted Forum or on my Twitter, I will give away a prize pack worth $30. That's all you have to do. You don't have to share it. You don't have to like it. You don't have to do anything. You just have to post the word Scream Queen either on the forum or on Twitter. If you're the first one on the forum and somebody beat you to it on Twitter, then you lose because I've only got one $30 prize pack. It'll be something Scream Queen related.
Yes.
Whether it'll be a movie or a book or a magazine or something else like that.
Something collectible.
Yep. But it'll be in that $30 range. Hit me up and claim your prize. We're going to start doing a little bit of that on the front end, get some little more interaction because people are out there, they're listening. I see the download numbers, but they're not joining the forums and they're not joining the discussions. So we have to hold a little candy out there for them. Get them addicted. All right. It's a quick history segment tonight. Nothing tremendous happening except on this date in 1781, March 13th, 1781, William Herschel discovers Uranus.
Nice.
Joke never gets old.
I was watching old My Name is Earl episodes the other day, and his brother realizes there's a planet called Uranus, and he can't get it out. Just keeps laughing, and he can't stop. It's always been a fun word to say. Turn into a 12-year-old every time.
Yep. 1997, the Phoenix Lights. You can look this up. It's pretty interesting. It was a large UFO sighting happening over Phoenix, Arizona, and it was actually seen on live TV. Millions of people saw this strange UFO phenomenon. So this is not our Aliens episode. We did that a few back if you want to hear our thoughts on aliens. But if you want to hear about the Phoenix Lights, go look it up. All right. We only have one birth and one death. So birth, 1911, L. Ron Hubbard.
Very well-known author.
Well-known author. Kind of scary.
Yeah.
And died this date in 1619 was Richard Burbage. He was Shakespeare's prime actor. He was the most famous actor of his day. He was the main character, the first person to play the role in most of William Shakespeare's plays. So a little notoriety there. And that's it for the history segment. Kind of in and out real quick on that. So let's get into the meat of it. Scott has a stack, a veritable smorgasbord of notes, and they're very small print and multiple pages. So I'm going to let him start off the Scream Queen adventure.
Yes.
Tell us about it.
Okay, me and Billy were sitting around my fun land one day, and I bought a collection a long time ago. This guy had a tremendous amount of Scream Queen paraphernalia. And everybody always remembers the girls from horror movies, you know. Women in horror movies, whether it be the damsel in distress or the woman that, you know, overcomes adversity to stop her nemesis, it's always been an important part in the horror genre. And there were a lot of Scream Queens back in the 80s. It was a real big deal. And, you know, the term Scream Queen for a long time, I know for me for a while, it just meant a B-movie actress that was in all the movies in the 80s, like Blood Diner or, you know, all the trauma movies. You know, it wasn't really a good actress. She was just in a lot of these goofy horror movies, and you'd see her all the time. But Scream Queens, actually, you know, it's an actual thing. There's a lot of women that just have found their niche in horror, and just they're able to do it real well, and they enjoy it a lot.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think going back to some of the first movies there were, I mean, one of the very first Dracula movie was Nosferatu. Mm-hmm. You know, he wasn't Dracula, but close enough to it. And you know, his main foil was in a silent movie, was a woman who screamed a lot whenever she saw the vampire. So I mean, it's a trope that goes all the way back,
right,
and up to and including now. I mean, generally there's a whole lot of PG-13 horror movies that are out, but the main character, whether it's the main hero or the main victim, is almost always a woman.
Right.
So there's quite a few young actresses that were, I don't know, let's say up and coming until they hit that niche, and then they found a very lucrative
a very lucrative
place where they could make a good living, either, you know, making the movies or on the convention circuit meeting fans, and they just stayed there.
Right, and some of them were able to branch out into other genres, and they became very, very popular actresses across the board. Mm-hmm. But and they're going to be lumped in with this this list we're going to put together also, just because they did have that initial niche, and they're known for horror movies and good horror movies. So, okay, I know you got a list, I got a list. We've got some lists. I'll let you go off first, because you went a little bit further back than me. I kind of got stuck in the 80s.
That's cool. Well, no, I mean, just going, you know, kind of keeping in with our ode to history. I mean, everything started somewhere.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the damsel in distress is not a modern trope, and it's not exclusive to horror.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of doing a cursory glance. I mean, it really kind of comes from a bunch of, like, medieval, the romantic tales of chivalry and knights and, you know, saving the princess or saving the maiden from either the evil bad guy or the monster or whatever. I mean, it goes all the way back into mythology.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it is in social convention, but also just in biology. I mean, we as men are hardwired to protect women,
right?
And whenever they're in trouble, you know, it gives us it gives us stress. So what better way to cause anxiety and fear than to put a woman in danger?
Yeah,
because if you're a woman, you're like, damn, I'm sure glad that's not me. That guy's you know, that bad guy or that shark or whatever is scary. If you're a man, you're like, shit. The killer's just taking out all of her dude friends. I don't think I would stand a chance. Now I'm going to go home and have nightmares. So, I mean, it goes all the way back. I mean, one of the first scream queens was Fay Wray in the original King Kong. You know, and if you watch that, she spends a lot of time screaming.
Yes, she does.
You would not scream if you were being carried around by
a giant ape.
You know, it goes all the way back into the silent films, and then from
there's
there
always that,
forward,
that element there.
You know, Mina Harker in Dracula, the actual Bride of Frankenstein, Victor's fiance / wife, who Frankenstein takes out as revenge.
Yeah.
You know, and then moving on into the. Into what is essentially the horror renaissance of the 70s.
Yes, yeah, they have some good examples there for sure.
You know, and that's kind of where you started picking up, was that 70s to the 80s,
right.
and on through.
Right.
So if you want to hit, you know, kind of top line some of your notes.
Yeah, we'll jump on a few of those, and I'll take from this one also. One of the ones that is brought up is, where is she at? Marilyn Burns, who was in Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And, you know, that movie changed the horror genre around totally. Mm-hmm. And to this day, that movie makes me jump. That's a scary movie to watch. It ranks up there with Exorcist with me as far as movies that are still scary to this day, no matter how many times I see them. You also had, around that time during the 70s, where is she at? Well, one, you had Sandra Peabody, who... she's a screen queen after appearing in Last House on the Left, which was a very good movie. Voices of Desire and Massage Parlor Murders, right before Marilyn Burns popped up.
Well, then you had, you know, in back, you know, further on back, you had Psycho.
Yeah, yeah, and I should have brought that one up.
You know,
sure.
Janet Leigh is probably that's. It, I don't know if she's known for much else but that one role.
And the horror stuff was in her genes,
you know. And then her daughter's Jamie Lee Curtis,
right.
Who, I don't know, I mean, she's called a scream queen, but to be fair, I've never thought of Jamie Lee Curtis as
because she was able to branch out and do some other stuff,
well,
too.
Well, I mean, within the movies.
Okay.
Like, she doesn't do, I mean, she does some weeping, and she does some,
yeah.
She does some, like, shock, like, oh my god, you know, but for the most part, she spends a lot of time fighting back and trying to get away.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
Sure. You know, I don't know. But, I mean, she's labeled as one for sure. I just would never consider her, like, she I always think of Jamie Lee Curtis sort of like Ripley.
Yeah.
You know,
in
she's...
the same type of role.
She has that first go-round where she's a true damsel in distress, but she is the one that ends up turning it around on him. And then whenever he comes back in future iterations, she fights him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's not a victim.
Right.
You know.
And that just goes along with all with what your definition of a scream queen would be. One definition that people look at is someone that was able to embrace the horror genre so well that they found a niche in it where they could really, really be successful. Under that, movies like Halloween and stuff would definitely qualify.
Absolutely.
For sure.
And when she came back to it, too.
Yeah.
I mean, she was gone from the horror genre for a while.
She did three altogether, right? She did one, two, and H2O. 20.
Yeah.
She was not afraid of that genre at all. Okay, after that, we're at, well, Jamie Lee Curtis, of course, she also starred in, not only that, but she was in The Fog. She was referenced in the movie Scream. Just as a connection with that horror genre and everything.
Her connection in Scream was very important.
Yeah.
Because I know there's a lot of people who will look at our title, Scream Queens, and immediately think that we're sitting there talking about how many boobs we saw,
or how hot chicks, or whatever.
And I mean, to be fair, there is a lot of that, and you know, that's one of those things. Whenever you used to watch a Friday the 13th, that was you expected to see that, and if you didn't, it was,
well, in the 80s, you know, that's pretty much what it was. Right. 'Cause there were a lot of B movies coming out, and a big part of those B movie horror films was the nudity and the sex involved.
Yeah. Absolutely. But in Scream, he points out, they're talking about, because they're watching Halloween, and the guy tells him, like, fast forward to where she gets naked, and he points out that she, through all of her horror stuff, she kept her clothes on.
Right.
That she didn't start going topless until she went legit in Trading Places.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
So, again, a horror genre gets a lot of lip for being exploitative, but it's... I mean, it is, it can be, but, you know, where are you more likely to expect to see some boobs? In a Halloween movie or in...
Blood Diner.
Well, in a Dan Aykroyd movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right. So, I see what you mean. But in the 80s, you know, I guess the 80s would be considered the glory days for Scream Queens because there were so many of them, and that had to do with the B-movie stuff. And all the Scream Queens back then that people really looked up to, like I said, Debbie Rochon was one that we talked about earlier. I got model kits of Debbie Rochon. There are very few people now that know who the hell Debbie Rochon is.
From what character? Was it just her?
The
model kit.
It was just her. It's her. It's called the Debbie Rochon Vinyl Model Kit.
Oh, wow.
But they had Scream Queens like that, like Julie Strain. People think of Julie Strain, they think of Playboy TV, that kind of stuff. She was considered a Scream Queen strictly because she used to model as Vampirella. She used to do a lot of horror modeling.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't do any acting in horror movies, really, except a couple of B-movies, and that's it. But she's considered one of the biggest scream queens of the 80s. And it's just because she looked hot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was a thing back then. But to me, it takes a little bit more than just that.
Well, even outside of the horror genre, I mean, you had actresses like Heather Thomas, you know. They had one role on a TV show, but they made a lot of money off of modeling and selling posters.
Right.
You know.
Okay, let's go ahead and jump into the 80s since I brought up Debbie Rochon already. She did a lot of trauma work. Santa Claus, CLAWS, Theater Bazaar, and Satan Hates You were a few of the roles that she had. And then let's get into one that a lot of people know is Heather Langenkamp from Nightmare on Elm Street.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
That would definitely consider her screen queen of the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
She's very well known for that movie. When you think of the movie, you think of her. She wasn't just in that one, of course. She was also in Number 3, Dream Warriors, and A New Nightmare. But, yeah, she did excellent work back in the day, for sure. Okay, next. You know, next I'm going to bring up somebody that just, to me, she was one of the greats. And a lot of people probably don't think of her as a screen queen, but just the one movie that she was in that I loved the most was Adrienne Barbeau from Swamp Thing.
Mm-hmm.
She was also in Creepshow. She was in one of the segments of the Creepshow number 1, and she was also in The Fog back in the day. She was great, I've always enjoyed Adrienne Barbeau. I've always thought she was hot. That was just me personally. She fit the type.
Hey, you know, I told you I picked up a novel by her the other day.
Really?
Strange thing. It's called Hollywood Vampires. And it, on the cover, it looks kind of like a Daniel Steele novel, like a schlocky romance.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I was at Goodwill, and I was, you know, because I'm always looking for books there, because they're cheap, you know, they're a dollar.
Right.
And I'm sitting there, like, flipping through, like, oh, you know, here's still more copies of Twilight, here's still more copies of 50 Shades of Grey, and then here's this, I'm like, that name sounds familiar. Pulled the book out and opened it up, and it's her. And it's like, oh, she was in, you know, the Swamp Thing and Creepshow, and I was like, you don't say. And there's, is it John Carpenter she was married to?
Yes, or? Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, there's a critical blurb on the back of the book where he says, if I'd known she was this cool, I would have stayed with her longer. Like, that's pretty rough. That's a pretty rough thing to say, but it's pretty funny.
Oh, man.
But yeah, I have that book. I'll eventually read it. I'll hand it off to you since you're a fan.
Yeah, I'll definitely check it out for sure, man. Okay, another one, PJ Souls. I don't know if you remember PJ Souls.
PJ Souls?
She started in the 70s. She's done some current stuff, too.
She was in Halloween.
She was in Devil's Rejects. She was one of the ladies in... She was one of the ladies at Captain Spaulding's brother's compound over there. But PJ Souls, she's been in a lot of stuff, man. She was in Carrie, Halloween, Devil's Rejects. She's very well recognized.
Yeah.
I guess you could say for sure.
She was extremely extremely popular in the horror genre back then. For whatever reason, I used to think it was her that was Chrissy in Jaws, the girl that gets.
Okay.
But it's not her.
No.
I don't think so.
Okay, you got one you want to bring up?
We're staying in the 80s. I mean, this is one of those things. Everybody's going to have their favorites, and they're going to have their most memorable. Because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, even now, you're sitting there flipping through your trading cards, and I haven't heard of a lot of these girls. And a lot of them are just in straight-to-video release.
Yeah, straight-to-DVD movies.
You know,
yeah. Video.
Straight-to-video movies, and maybe they were just quick and easy victims. I would generally think that the Scream Queen, I mean, if you're going to earn the title Queen, you have to, like, elevate it a little bit. You have to either transcend your role and, like, you know, kind of like a Jamie Lee Curtis did, or you'd have to be in a lot of movies and recognizable as, oh, that's that chick from the horror movies.
Yes, yeah.
You know, so, one of my favorite franchises is Friday the 13th, but, you know, most of the girls didn't survive those.
No.
The only ones that really survived, and she didn't even survive, was in part one, you know, but she didn't come back for part two.
And very rarely did a girl, you know, take over the movie, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
You know, where they were the focus of the entire movie.
Until the 90s.
Yeah. That's when it really started.
And then you had a whole bunch of TV actresses that were known in other things that kind of just brought the noise from TV into... You know, it's kind of a stepping stone.
Right.
It's kind of like a heavy metal band, you know. It's like you play heavy metal, you play hard, hard, fast-driving music, and then you finally get your record deal, and the first thing you have to do is sign a ballot, you know, write a ballot.
Yeah.
So you get to release your quick and heavy song, and then you have to release your ballad to bring in all the girls.
You got to make sure you cover everybody.
I think that's a stepping stone for a lot of actresses. You know, you start in TV... And then you move into horror.
And then you can move up.
Then that'll you can move up to from the next there.
Stage. Yeah.
So in the, you know, in the 90s, you say Debbie Rochon was in a lot of the, the trauma picks. But, you know, then you had, like, for lack of a better word, softies like Neve Campbell.
Yeah.
You know,
Neve Campbell, I'll consider one.
You know, Courtney Cox.
Well,
you know,
Rose McGowan is brought up every once in a while,
yeah.
Too.
I mean, she's the quintessential victim,
mm-hmm.
You know. But Neve Campbell and Courtney Cox did what? What are we on? Like, we're coming up on another Scream, so like it would be five Screams.
Five, yeah, should be five altogether.
You know, but they've done four. Then Jennifer Love Hewitt pretty much helmed the I Know What You Did Last Summer franchise.
She did, and she didn't do a whole lot besides that. That she's really that'd be considered notable. She had the television show that she did for a while, even after that. But what other movies can you remember that she really?
Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Yeah.
She was in TV and
on TV. She was in that show. I can't remember the name of the show even.
That was Party of the Five.
Yes. But she had one after that too when she got over.
Well, she was in that one where she was like a medium.
Yeah.
Like she was a ghost talker.
I think it was called Medium actually.
Yeah. I never watched it.
Me neither.
That's one of those. That's like CWT, whatever TV shows. But you know, Sarah Michelle Gellar was in I Know What You Did Last Summer. See, like this is weird because there. I guess I missed that little chunk of the '90s where horror went from being like really scary rated R stuff. Then it kind of hit a bump with Scream, which was considered to be like a horror renaissance. But it's almost like. Because
step back.
It's, well, Scream was
it was a great movie. Yeah, yeah. But after that.
But, after that, it's like everybody was like, ooh, Scream was a little brutal with the knife stabs. It was like watching Drew Barrymore, who's just like everybody loves Drew Barrymore. And just watching her just suffer the way she did. It's like you had to dial it back a little bit.
Yeah.
You know.
But they dialed it back too much almost.
They did.
I think a lot of that had to do with, because I worked at the movies back in the 90s. Early 90s. I was still in high school. But a lot of kids went to movies. Parents would drop their kids off as babysitters on the weekends. And kids were spending the bulk of the movie money, man. And if you can't get them into your movie, you know, you're losing money on it. So they kind of dialed it back. And, you know, instead of hoping for that R rating, they were hoping for that PG-13 rating.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, though. I remember... You could always get a ticket. There were not ushers walking up and down checking your ID. If you had a buddy, it was kind of like beer. If you had a buddy or another teenager selling the tickets, or, you know, last resort, you buy a ticket to a different movie and then go watch your horror movie or whatever, the movies got seen.
Oh yeah, well,
and then a lot of them, if the box office wasn't spectacular, then they made all their money back in video.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, even back then, you know, when I was a kid, I remember. And if my cousin Mark is listening to this, I hope he gives me a hollers at me about this. But I remember going to the theater for Nice Dreams, Cheech and Chong Nice Dreams. I was 11 or 12 years old, and my mom yelling from the car to tell the ticket lady to let me and my cousin in. And I was like 11 years old, and she was like, "Okay, we got him." And they let us go in and see Nice Dreams by Cheech and Chong, man. It was it was a lot easier to get in back then. It was very, very easy.
The world went and got itself all tight-assed.
Yeah.
It's like all of a sudden all these rules were no longer guidelines. They were like hard, like armed guard laws.
It's crazy, man.
And, you know, I think the world's worse for it. Because poor kids, they don't know what to do with themselves now.
Yeah.
They binge drink and you know, film porn. Because they can't go watch a Friday the 13th. Like, what would you rather your kids be doing, right?
No joke, man. It's sad. People, they try to protect their kids from too much stuff, and they never get a chance to learn about it and understand it.
Because I would never, I mean, and I know 90s was whenever I was into going and seeing bands. Like I was that target demographic. It was like hardcore. But I didn't go see, like, I saw Scream.
I watched mostly old stuff.
I saw Event Horizon. I didn't see. I don't think to this day I've seen I Know What You Did Last Summer.
I saw the first one.
You know, it just didn't. It didn't appeal to me. And I realized that I was, you know, maybe I was in my late teens, early 20s, so I was no longer in that demographic. But still, like, as being a horror buff, there is a tremendous list of horror movies from the last 20 years that I haven't seen.
Yeah, they didn't have interest to. Yeah. Well, you know, I started learning that if in the lead up to a movie being released, it was 3 weeks before it was going to be released, and they were still saying this film has not yet been rated.
Yeah.
It meant it wasn't going to be rated R, and there was no point in going to see it because they were trying to get that PG-13 rating. You know, and they didn't want to say it because they didn't want to turn the entire audience off, so they went ahead and just...
Absolutely.
Left it for a surprise. And but yeah, it really killed a lot of movies, man.
No, I mean, no offense to Jennifer Love Hewitt or Sarah Michelle Gellar. You guys are good at what you do. But, like, there's episodes of Buffy the Vampire Slayer that are scarier than a lot of the schlock horror that was coming out in those
it was in those lean crap, years man.
In late, mid-late 90s.
it was a tremendous amount of crap. And luckily, we're seeing a change now where a lot of more rated R movies are coming out. They're realizing that, you know, let's go ahead and step it up.
Absolutely.
Make it what it's supposed to be. You know, another one that I would actually, I thought about earlier was Kate Beckinsale. She was in a Vacancy. Mm-hmm. It was one other one she did. I can't remember what the other horror movie was that she did, but she was excellent.
Underworld.
Yeah, Underworld. Yeah, of course.
The whole Underworld series. She was here at, was it Comic Palooza?
Yeah, she's a very, very sweet lady. Cool. She was awesome. She was really, really nice. Friendly with everybody. Very personable and stuff.
See, and I, you know, my mind goes almost directly to Sherry Moon Zombie.
Definitely.
You know what I mean?
You have to have her on this list.
And so at this point, because she's been doing this for so long, I mean, she was the dancers in White Zombie's videos, like,
the first video I saw of Rob Zombie, I remember her being in that video,
you know,
very well.
And Zombie has such a functional knowledge of and love for the entire genre that when he puts her in front of the camera, she is embodies, like, she takes the role of everyone from Fay Wray all the way down. She is the epitome of Scream Queen. I would really have to say that if you had to say, like, other than one of, you know, the some of the classics like Julie Strain, or, you know, it would have to be Sherry Moon, because,
well, she can, the thing about
she's playing the role of a Scream Queen in life.
And she can do every type. She can do the victim, she can do the person that's fighting it, she can do the antagonist.
Right.
You know, she can be the bad guy. She can do it all, and she does it all real well.
And she sticks to Rob Zombie horror movies.
Yeah.
Which, to be fair, I love me some scary movies. Rob Zombie's movies are a little hard to handle.
You know,
he's pulling that, like, he's pulling that spirit of Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh yeah, in every one.
In every one, and
scene.
And he makes them very dirty. He makes them very dreadful. He makes them hard to deal with, you know, which is what his goal is.
Right.
But
I picked up Blu-ray copies of both. It was a two disc set of both House of a Thousand Corpses and Devil's Rejects last week.
Sweet.
So I rewatched them last night, man. And you can't. I mean, those movies are just, to me, they're phenomenal. You know, the opening scene of House of a Thousand Corpses, where you first get introduced to Captain Spaulding, and you realize this is a sadistic motherfucker right here. It is great.
Who catches random people on the side of the road and turns them into mermaids?
Yeah.
As art. Like, that is just...
And the whole family, you know, the whole family is just, this is the way it is. This is the way we do things.
Yep.
You know, it's crazy, man. And Sherry Moon, she jumps right into it. Every movie she's been in, you know, from the only one I haven't seen is 31. I haven't seen 31.
I haven't seen that yet.
But, you know, every movie, even Salem movie, she was great in that one. I mean, she made the Halloween movies that Rob Zombie did. She made those movies, man. She was so good in the first Halloween remake he made. I'm so glad you brought her up, man.
we're getting to an era where, thank God, there's people like Rob Zombie who bring it back.
Yeah.
Because
old,
know,
school, you know.
We lost Wes Craven not too long ago. You know, he did a good job, and he brought him back hard hitting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but we're losing some of those old school guys that really knew what they were doing.
Clive Barker needs to jump back up and grab a couple of those novellas or books that I've read of his for years and years and years, and see about turning some of those into movies, man.
Does he even do anything anymore?
No. He's not doing appearances or anything, man. I wish.
He's just chilling?
The last appearance that I know of him doing was a long time ago out in Austin, dude. It was forever ago. But he's a brilliant... I love his books. From fantasy to horror, he does a great job with everything. Let's see. I had one I was going to bring up just now. I'm trying to find it. I can never pronounce her last name. Jovovich. Mm. I'll just go ahead and run it real quick. Resident Evil films, of course. And she was also in a movie called Faces in the Crowd. Have you ever heard of that movie?
I have not.
Me neither. That's another, what's listed as a horror movie, which I've said that I need to try to check that out and see how she does. But just the Resident Evil franchise itself is, it's a pretty big deal.
She doesn't do much screaming.
No. She's one of those ones. She is definitely not the victim, for sure. And there was one more I was going to jump on. Well, Danielle Harris, which is another one. She did Halloween 4 and 5.
Danielle Harris was in the Rob Zombie Halloweens.
Yeah. Well, see, I didn't have it on. I just had Halloween 4 and 5. Are his remakes considered 4 and 5? I wouldn't think so. Because I had Danielle Harris listed as Halloween. She was listed in Halloween 4 and 5.
I don't know if Danielle Harris was alive when Halloween 4 came out.
Okay. So those are other notable roles were Urban Legend and Hatchet 2. Which one was listed here, so.
Yeah, she was.
Yeah, I do remember her in that remake, actually.
Yeah, she was. She was Laurie's friend.
Yeah.
The one who died in the originals. She was the one that died. He choked her in the car.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Can't think of her name. Annie.
That is it. It is Annie. Amber Heard is another one that I saw brought up on a couple of articles that I read. She was in Zombieland. She was in The Ward. You might recognize her. I think she was the older
sister. Abigail Breslin?
Amber Heard.
Oh, yeah. Okay. She's done quite a bit of horror movies.
Yeah. Yeah. That's another one of the current ones that we have out there right now.
Yeah, because Abigail Breslin, I mean, she won massive awards for Little Miss Sunshine, but she's done a lot of horror movies, and she's really good at it. She's still really young, so she's in teen horror, but, so she was in Signs, Shyamalan's Signs.
Okay.
She was Mel Gibson's daughter, I think. But she was in Zombieland, she was in Haunter, she was in Maggie with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
And apparently one called Final Girl that I need to look up.
Yeah, I saw that.
I've heard good things about it.
I've never seen it before, but I have heard of it before. Let's see. Who do we have next?
Strangely enough, I'm looking at this page. You've seen Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2.
Yes.
Okay.
That's somewhere around here.
You remember how gay that, like, so many of those scenes were. And to be fair, if you watch, like, The Lost Boys, and you notice that, like, Corey Haim has a poster of, like, a muscle man in his closet.
Yes.
There's just, like, little tropes of people, like, it's like the set designers were going, you know, it's like, oh, well, you know, He-Man's popular, so let's put a He-Man lookalike on the closet in this teenage boy's room, right? And it's not, you know, hey, you know, whatever, he might, like, no. There was no love interest in the movie. He could have totally been, you know, gay teenager. But in Freddy's Revenge, they talk about how homoerotic it was, and then, like, how he's dancing and just doing stuff. It says here that Mark Patton, who was the main guy, has in recent years been touted at horror conventions as mainstream's horror first male scream queen.
That is cool. You gotta love those self-made titles by fans.
Mm-hmm.
Just throwing them out there. And there was one I saw. I'm trying to find where she went. Elaine Camp. Crampton. Hey, Barbara Crampton. Did I talk about her already? I don't think I did. She was started in the 80s. She was in Reanimator. Beyond Chopping Mall. She was in Lords of Salem with Sherry Moon Zombie, actually, also. She's another one that is pretty well known. She's done a lot of... Stuart Gordon, the director. Remember Stuart Gordon? He did a bunch of those B-movies back in the 80s.
Sounds familiar. What movies?
Shit. I think he did Chopping Mall and a few other ones. Yeah, she did a lot of films with him, apparently, so... But look her up. You'll recognize her. As soon as you see her picture, you'll remember who Barbara Crampton was.
Absolutely.
And Asia Argento, which one that I'm not overly familiar with, but apparently she was in Land of the Dead, Mother of Tears. Go ahead.
Asia Argento is the daughter of Derry. God damn it. My brain is not working quite right. Dario Argento. who is a master horror movie maker.
Okay.
So he made a whole lot of really violent horror movies in like the 70s.
Yeah, see, yeah, Suspiria, and The Bird with the Crystal Plumage.
And if you've ever seen one of his movies, he's got a special touch. I mean, he's kind of like the Roman Polanski of horror movies. And Asya is his daughter.
Okay.
And so she kind of came up, she grew up on the set of a horror movie. And as soon as she got old enough, she was in several. She's really good.
She's apparently rated Sexiest Woman in the World by Maxim Magazine.
You've probably seen her before, dude. She's like, she's really hot brunette with short-ish hair. And then she's got this big angel tattoo, like right here, okay. Like right above her crotch. She's got other tattoos, but that's the one that's like,
okay,
you know, it's like right on her lower torso there.
Another modern one to bring out is Catherine Isabel, who she was Ginger in Ginger Snaps.
Okay.
The movie Ginger Snaps. But she was also in Freddy vs. Jason and the reboot of Carrie.
Okay.
Those two movies also. So, yeah, she's one that has kind of embraced the genre for sure. And then there's so many that you can just give honorable mentions to. I mean,
right,
one that popped in my head was Lisa Bonet from Angel Heart. I mean, she did such an outstanding job in Angel Heart. That's a good movie. I'm not sure if you've seen it or it's been a while since you've seen Angel Heart, but it's the one with Mickey Rourke.
Okay.
He's a detective down in Louisiana he's been hired by a guy named Louis Cipher. He took him a while to figure out that was Lucifer to find somebody that Lucifer that owed his soul to Lucifer.
Okay.
So he's down in Louisiana trying to find this guy, and it's a really, really good one.
That is a good movie.
Gets a little long in the tooth from time to time. It was a little slow, but all in all, it's a good one.
Well, so what's your, I mean, kind of what's your thoughts? I mean, we talked about a lot of the actresses, and you know why the actresses take the roles. So you understand, you know, that everybody's familiar with the concept of the casting couch. Even before it became a porno trope, everybody knew what that meant. Where basically women are exploited, they're taken advantage of. They go in for an audition, and there's no casting director. There's just some old producer that's like, hey, you want to be in this movie? Do me some favors. And
just a little off.
You know, that's just Hollywood Babylon. Everybody knows that it exists.
Right.
But then you've got the actresses that are willing to strip, and then the ones who are not willing to strip.
Yeah.
Sometimes it seems as if the ones who are willing to strip kind of end up languishing in a B movie.
They get pigeonholed.
Yeah. Is, in your opinion, or from what you think or know, is that something that is more talent based or more favor based? Because you can watch a lot of these old movies, and a lot of these actors and actresses, you know, scream queens, but also the actors. They were after a quick buck, and they're not after our top talent.
Right.
And sometimes top talent, you know, sometimes underbelly talent has a certain something about them that keeps them working, but they're never quite, they're not like A-list scale.
Yeah.
And they never would be. And you watch some of their acting, and you're like, okay, well, yeah, you can act scared of an axe murderer because axe murderers are frightening, but can you emote anything but...
But can you bring the audience in with you?
Right.
Make them scared also. I mean, the most successful screen queens that, you know, were in the best movies definitely is talent-based. And I think they embrace it. You know, they find something they're really, really... just like finding something you're really good at and wanting to go ahead and get better and continue with it. A lot of the B-movies from back in the day, they're just trying to get a job. I mean, a lot of the trauma actors... Trauma, this horrible movies, dude. They're classics, you know, I haven't received it yet, but I got a Trauma's Top 10 when the Top 10 Trauma movies from the 80s. I'll be picking that up here pretty soon. But, you know, they're just classic movies. And the people in them, they never went on to get awards or branch out in any of the genres. That's what they did.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a little bit of both. You know, you got somebody like Sherry Moon Zombie. She could do anything. But I think she just loves that genre so much, she'll never do anything but horror.
This is one of the curiosities. Do you think Sherry Moon has... And, you know... I don't know, and I don't want to. But do you think she's been on auditions where they're like, "No, you're good at what you do, but don't quit your day job," sort of thing?
No, I don't think she has.
You think she just
she sticks with what she loves, you know. It's just one of, because her and Rob, you know, they both do it because of love of the art. You absolutely know, it's not just about money.
Well, yeah, you get to a certain point where you don't have to do anything,
right?
And like we're, you know, like Clive Barker, I know a lot of people. I'm one of them. I love to create. Like, I love creating things. I love making things. I love building things. I love taking something that doesn't exist and turning it into something, whether that's through writing or music or podcasting or building stuff.
Woodwork, with anything.
Yeah. However, the process frustrates the hell out of me because I'm a perfectionist. So when I sit down to start writing, it's what Neil Gaiman says. It's all... The secret to writing is putting one word in front of the next and then doing the next one. And it's that easy, but it's also that hard. You know, and I hate that process. I love having made something. I hate fucking making
it. Getting to that point. Getting to the end point.
So a lot of times, if you think, you know, some people have that money, but they still keep working. You know, it's because for love of the game.
Right.
They don't need it anymore. I mean, shit, if I... You could play one season of NBA basketball for some of these guys' signing bonuses, and you could retire with more money than your grandchildren will ever see,
right,
but they keep playing. You know? It's because they love the game. A lot of these scream queens, they keep working. They keep...
They love what they do. They're on the convention circuit.
They keep, you know, keep running around, signing autographs and talking about movies they made 40 years ago.
But you get that cult following, and you know that people were meant... I mean, you gotta realize that... For somebody to be an actor or a stand-up comic once told me this, you got to have some bit of an attention whore personality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they need that acknowledgement. They need people to like them. And if you find a niche where you know for sure you're going to have a fan base, people are going to be, you know, happy to see you, you stick with it. You know, it goes along with that. You know, it's sad to say. It's just a blunt way to put it, but... Get these all scooped up. I got more than this, dude, believe it or not. This is far from it.
Man. Some of these haircuts back in the 80s and early 90s.
They flowed.
Sometimes they didn't. And that's what's funny about them, is because they're all big and poofy.
Some of the old, just the high school photos they used to have back in the day, just the rooster tails the girl would have up in her hair and everything, you know.
Tawny Kitaen, that's one I've been thinking
yes.
of. From Witchboard and Whitesnake videos.
Yep.
She's
still a beautiful woman. She is still very, very she does the convention scene.
Yeah. This whole time I've been thinking of her, like, dude, who was the... She was in... Yeah, Witchboard was a good scary movie. I think I need to watch that one again. I remember that.
Yeah, it was a good one.
Was she also... What else was she in?
She's in Bachelor Party with Tom Hanks.
Well, no, right? Yeah, I know she's about... I'm talking about horror.
Yeah, I'm talking about horror.
Because Whitesnake videos are not very scary, but that's her, you know her from, and she's the chick on the car.
Right.
And
why are you thinking just real quick?
David Coverdale had better hair stylist than she did.
Why are you thinking, have you ever seen a show called Legit, starring Australian comedian Jim Jefferies?
Uh-uh.
It's a great show. It only lasted 2 seasons, and you can watch them all on Netflix right now. But it pretty much ended with it. The show was based on his stand-up act, so it was only 2 seasons worth of stuff. But there's one of the episodes is him having to deal with a female casting agent. And it pretty much is the same thing that goes on with the women with men casting agents happens to him. And it is hilarious, dude. It is a very, very good episode. But just see that twist where, you know, he wasn't expecting that kind of shit to happen. You know, a woman throws a leg up on the desk and says, okay.
You're not even going to buy me dinner first?
It was bad as the first time he didn't get the part. So he asked to go back and try it again, and he did. And yeah, that's a pretty good episode, but you definitely check that out on Netflix.
What was it called?
Legit is the name of the show. Yep.
I'll have to check that out. So we're kind of hitting the end. Have you seen Logan yet?
I haven't had a chance to yet, but I intend on doing that by this weekend for sure.
Talking about women and in genre stuff, but the little girl who plays X-23, his clone, his daughter,
yeah.
Incredible. Like,
I've heard nothing but good about
it.
So.
It's incredible. She's brilliant. Like, the movie's great.
Mm-hmm.
With, you know, like, she's a pivotal point. She's a main part in it. But, you know, she's 11 years old. And you're just like, and she's killing people left and right. And she's got the rage and the emotion, just the full range. She's got it. She's in. So we're gonna be seeing a lot more of her. Her first name's Daphne.
Oh yeah, but I mean, you could already tell this movie's gonna be, you know, enormously successful. So I'm sure we'll be seeing
a lot more of her. It's a brilliant movie. And so my wife, who is a big fan of the X-Men, she's also a big fan of Hugh Jackman in general. Sat through the whole movie, like, tensed up, and was like, I don't know if I like that, because it was so violent, so...
Wolverine's supposed to be like that.
So though. Over the top, it was bleak, and it, I mean, it was just so brilliant, it's so good, you gotta go see it as soon as you can. I wanna go see it again, I just gotta find somebody who goes with me, because she won't, she's like, that didn't have all the little tongue-in-cheek comic book references that the Avengers.
If you get a chance to go early in the afternoon, man, let me know, babe. We'll go check it out.
We'll see, because yeah, it's damn good.
So. Like I said, I've heard nothing but good about it, so I'm definitely looking forward to see. But you know, me and a friend of mine was here picking up some toys today. We were talking. One thing I brought up is I've always been disappointed about how they never gave Sabretooth his just due, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. You know, the rivalry between him and Wolverine, to me, It was huge. You know, I was a big fan of it. You know, Sabretooth. Marvel just did him wrong in the movies. Now that Logan's passed, we'll never see anything again with Sabretooth. And it's just sad to me, man.
Well, you might. Because Logan is set so far into the future that there's a lot of things that happen in Logan that are like, wait, what? When did that happen? That they're just talking about stuff that happened. Professor X and Logan are talking about things about that time when, and my wife was like, was that in Apocalypse?
And they're kind of setting stuff up for some other movies.
Yeah, and it's like, no, it wasn't in Apocalypse. This hasn't happened that we've seen yet. And so you know, so they're setting some things up for possible for the past, but it'll be somebody else playing Wolverine, I guess, and probably James McAvoy playing X.
Which kind of sucks, because I'm not going to lie. One thing that I'm most grateful for to Hugh Jackman is bringing one of my favorite comic book characters ever to life.
Dude, he...
And did a great job doing it.
17 years, bro. And only got better.
Yeah. And he did it perfect. You know, he's exactly what I imagine Wolverine to be like. Mm-hmm. You know?
And I remember, because you can never please everybody. So, like, they... Like, anytime you put a comic book character on the screen, fanboys just want to rip on it. But you can argue about Ben Affleck as Batman, or you can argue about whether Michael Keaton's better than frickin' Gene Hackman as an actor. You cannot argue with Wolverine for 17 years.
You're right. Like the doing best, it right.
The best rendered comic book character on screen. You know, they've done well with a lot of them, but
they never had to change him out. He did it. He hit a home run every time.
Yep. So he's gonna be missed.
Oh, yeah.
He's kind of free to do other movies now, I guess.
But, you know, has he been typecast to the point to where...
I don't think so.
No, he has, because he's done other stuff. He's a good actor all around.
Yeah, I think he can pull it through. And I think that's going to close us down for our Scream Queens episode.
That was a fun one, dude.
If we missed one, guys, if you've got a favorite crush, if you had a poster on your wall, if you are one of the Scream Queens and you said, you know, hey, you didn't mention me, hit us up on the social media.
Complain about it.
I'm not going to go back and re-mention what I mentioned at the beginning of how you're going to be able to get stuff. You have to listen to the whole damn episode. So, or just the first couple minutes, actually. But I'm not going to tell you here.
If you need some 80 Scream Queen trading cards, hit me up, and I can definitely provide some to you. I've got plenty over here. I've got uncut press sheets of these things, everything. So.
Nice. Like, comment, share. Tell your friends about us. We love you guys. We will see you later.
Later.